Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
And good morning to you. Thank you so much, Lindy. It is 5 minutes past nine. It is Thursday, the 2nd of July. My name is Kathy Kayla, and this is the Dis-Chem Foundation Show. Joining me in studio, we have the Dis-Chem Foundation team. We're going to be speaking to them in a little while. But I would like to say good morning. It's been too long, actually, since we've actually done this show. And it's very important to do it regularly because of the work that the Dis-Chem Foundation does. Often stepping in where there's a crisis and stepping in to fulfill roles that would ordinarily be fulfilled perhaps by governments. Anyhow, it's not a political show. We're talking about doing good in the world. I was actually saying to somebody in the office earlier that just because it doesn't exist doesn't mean you shouldn't start something, right? Start something beautiful. Start something that is going to make the world a better place. Start with your neighborhood. Start with your street. Start with your neighbors. Okay, you can't fix your neighbors. What can I say? But we're talking about hunger because the statistics on hunger are absolutely staggering. If you think about how much we have in terms of technology and the production of, you know, your fresh produce, your vegetables, your fruits, your grains and cereals. And yet the World Health Organization puts the global number at 673 million people globally. Isn't that crazy? The South African figures. Very interesting. South Africa presents a complex paradox because nationally South Africa produces more than enough food to feed its population, yet it's a net exporter of agricultural goods such as maize. However, due to extreme inequality and economic strain, millions of citizens cannot afford to buy it. According to the Global Alliance Against Hunger, the daily food insecurity recent data indicates that at least 15 million South Africans, that's roughly 25% of the population, suffer from food insecurity and do not get enough to eat every day. There's around 6.8 million individuals, that's 11.4% of our population, that experience severe food insecurity, meaning that they frequently experience total food disruption and hunger. And then there's child malnutrition. Over 1,000 children die from malnutrition annually in South Africa. That's roughly 27.5% of children under the age of five, which are suffering from food insecurity, which leads to physical and cognitive stunting. These figures all come from the Global Alliance Against Hunger. And then there's the social safety net. You know, to stave off mass starvation, the South African government I'm not sure how much the South African government is doing, but we're going to be talking about the Dis-Chem Foundation in a little while. As I said, my name is Kathy Kayla. If you'd like to get in touch with me during the next hour until 10 o'clock, you can send a WhatsApp, and that number is 061-895-1019. I want to talk a little bit about hunger. I mean, do you think about hunger? Do you remember, I mean, we used to have pictures of starving children that was happening in Ethiopia. And we didn't really consider what was happening in our neck of the woods, South Africa. It's important that we talk about this. Okay, so the data surrounding food loss and waste is actually staggering. According to landmark studies by the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research, that's the CSIR, and the World Wildlife Fund, the annual picture in South Africa is that South Africa loses or wastes roughly 10.3 million tons of edible food every year. That represents 45% of the country's total available food supply. So fresh produce, whether it's fruits, vegetables, cereals, it makes up a massive 70% of that total wastage. On a daily basis, what does that mean? So if you look at overall food waste, South Africa dumps roughly 27,000 or 27,500 tons of food every single day. So the question that I'm asking is why? Where is it happening and why? So contrary to popular belief, most of the dumping doesn't happen in household bins. In South Africa, 68% of the loss happens early in the supply chain. So during primary farming production, post-harvest handling and factory processing or packaging. And it's often due to stricter retail aesthetics. So retailers, they know that ugly carrots don't sell, right? It's also very difficult to use those carrots if you are wanting to produce something else with them. So, okay, so it's an ugly carrot. We're going to use it rather to make a carrot cake because ugly carrots and pretty carrots taste the same. The thing is that when you are working in a factory, you have to have some form of uniformity with your fresh produce. So that becomes a challenge. But what does this all mean for you and for I? What does this mean for South Africa? So South Africa is facing this contradiction. Despite producing enough food to feed its population, millions of people continue to experience hunger and food insecurity. This challenge is often referred to as hidden hunger. That's a word we're going to be using a lot in the next hour. Hidden hunger is a condition where people may consume enough food to survive, but lack access to the nutritious foods needed for healthy growth, development, and overall well-being. So here are some of the hard facts. In fact, Jacqueline Kahlberg, hello. I feel like I'm going to just leave the next hour to you.
No, you're not.
Can you please, let's talk about the hard facts.
The hard facts are that we do produce in South Africa sufficient food nationally to feed its population, as you've already spoken to. millions of South Africans live in food insecure households and struggle to access regular nutritious meals.
Yes.
Contributing factors are poverty, unemployment, inequality, rising food prices are among the leading causes of hunger in the country. So it's not to say people are not eating, but they're eating purely starch with no nutrients. So it's keeping them alive. It's not sustaining them. If you will.
Yes.
And as you spoke to the tons of food that are wasted annually, and here people are starving. And hidden hunger affects children's development, educational outcomes, health and future opportunities that you've also spoken to. Malnutrition is real. We've spoken about this many times. We were at a talk yesterday, and there were government officials, and, you know, they spoke to, and the man was so incredibly passionate about what he was speaking about, but he doesn't have perhaps enough information, or he went out into communities and he spoke to the fact that, you know, people come and they measure the BMI, you know, which is the body mass index. But what he didn't seem to realize or understand is that you're speaking to, why are they measuring the BMI? And that's to measure the effects of potential malnutrition. Is the child malnutrition? Because if the upper arm is not the correct length and breadth, it's a sign of malnutrition, and that's the quickest, surest way to measure it. So there's unfortunately so much information, but not enough basic knowledge, if that makes any kind of sense.
It does make sense. So here's my question to you. Jacqueline, how can a country that produces enough food still have hungry communities? From your understanding, I can quote any amount of figures from the CSIR and from the World Health Organization, but the truth is that Dis-Chem Foundation works on the ground and you see it firsthand. I learned more about what's really happening in South Africa from these shows than from any papers that I read.
So your question is what can be done?
My question is why?
Why?
Yes. Or how can a country that produces enough food still have hungry communities?
Well, I think you spoke to that in your opening as well, is that not enough is being done. There's wastage. Instead of diverting the wastage correctly,
yes,
so that there is availability of good food for human consumption, it's tossed, you know. And then there's a situation where you speak to ugly carrots and the like, and there's a company, actually, that makes a very delicious vegetable juices that you'll get in milk looking cartons, and they take the ugly carrots and the not so pretty tomatoes and all the rest of it, and they process that into a delicious juice in a box. But it's for the higher LSM again, you know, instead of that food being redirected into the communities where there is a need. you know, it again, it's gone into a retail situation. I don't know. I don't know. I'm going to let Emma.
Okay, so let, go at that. Hello, Emma.
Also, just to add
this
on.
This is Emma van Dongen.
Hi.
Hello, Emma.
I think also just to add on to what Jacqueline was saying is it's not about producing enough food. South Africa does produce enough food. It's the access to this food. That's the problem. That's why so many South Africans are going hungry and are part of the hidden hunger crisis, because they just don't have the resources to access this food, whether it be they don't have enough money. They
so you're saying it's economic?
That's a contributing factor to it.
Yes.
Yes.
What are the other factors? Because it sounds like you're quite...
I think at the foundation, we're all very passionate about this because it is a huge problem, because just because a child's eating doesn't mean they're getting fulfilled and they're getting the right nutrients and they're getting the right food to help them keep going.
So a cup once a day is not enough.
It's not enough. It's not enough nutrients. And I think other contributing factors are, besides economic, is where you live. If you're not close to a store and it's going to cost you to travel to get to the nutrients, that's also hard, and that also does affect the access you have to food.
Is this mainly affecting people in, you know, in urban areas?
No.
Okay, so let's also bring in Luvukazi Mponzo. How's it, Luvo? Is this mainly affecting people in urban areas or in rural areas? Is it across the board?
The prices, they affect everyone, and also the affordability. I think it's the problem we have as South Africans. It's the economic factor. So it's everywhere, but it hits hard in certain places based on what they do, the standard of living as well. So that could be the problem. And also, I think another contributing factor when it comes to the distribution and also the hidden hunger crisis is the fact that we've got rules and regulations in South Africa. We've got laws. Companies, they need to comply. And we're not saying that those laws shouldn't be put in place, but can maybe be go back to the drawing board, because this is a problem we're facing. As much as we need to comply to those laws as companies, but this is the problem we have. So that's also a contributing factor, the laws and the regulations within the supply chain, the retail environment within South Africa.
Give me an example of one of the laws or the, you know, the rules of and regulations.
For example, with the, as much as we're producing more, let's say in a farm level, they get to to be afraid in terms of taking that food to the communities, because at the end of the day, you need to comply. Let's say you take a food to a certain community and then there was an outbreak that is maybe waiting there in terms of the illness.
E. coli. Because the sanitation is not working.
Yes. Okay. And then the farm will have to account, right? So you need to follow rules when it comes to also distributing those the wastage on your side in terms of that farm. So
compliance costs money.
Yeah.
Why is the government not helping to fund? Do we have any ideas on this? I mean, Jacqueline's holding her hands up in the air and shaking her head saying, Lordy, Lordy, Lordy.
Yeah, we wish we had the answers for the government, but unfortunately we don't.
And I think to add on to what Luvo is saying with compliance is it starts at the farm level and it feeds its way all the way through to a restaurant.
Yeah.
The food that is edible and can be eaten, they still can't take that and give to the community, because if someone gets sick, they will be held accountable for it, even if it's not from their food.
Yeah.
So it's all the way through from the beginning
to
the end.
I wonder how many cases these decisions, you know, how many legal cases these decisions are actually made on. I heard a story once that the reason that we have those cuffs around hot coffee, it says warning, hot coffee, is because somebody had spilt hot coffee on her groin and had burnt herself and sued Starbucks.
Yeah.
And as a result, now every cup of coffee has to have this thing. And it's a that's based on one case.
Pushes up the prices on
every. But not
level
everybody's
compliance.
An idiot. I'm sorry. Not everybody's a, you know.
So I just want to go back a step if I can. So we are all very au fait with this, and I sit here so proudly because of the passion exuding from Emma and Lavo, and always
all
so
three of you.
So we just love it. All of us, Maria, Lynette, we're very. This is a big problem, and this is something that we're always trying to combat in whatever way we can.
Yes,
and just to answer the one question is that. Experts say that a big part of the problem is not the availability of food, but the access to it, which both ladies have spoken to and yourself. The difficult choices that have to be made by households, irrespective of how large or small the income, truly is, it's a choice. Do we buy food or do we pay for transport so we can get to work? We need electricity. We need to have a roof over our head. We have to have the basic need. And unfortunately, the nutritious food takes a back seat where there is some form of an income. Again, irrespective of how big or small it is. And that's also a problem, is the inaffordability, which we've all spoken to. It's a big problem.
And also to add on to that, not just the affordability of it, the education about it.
Yes. Mm. Yes.
It's not, people aren't getting educated that this food isn't going to sustain you.
Okay,
it doesn't
listen,
have enough
I grew up
nutrients.
In the 80s where the food pyramid was like you fill up on carbs, that was the bottom of the pyramid, and then you have your fruit and vegetables,
yeah,
and you have your meat, and then you have your sweets.
I'm going to let
it was all wrong completely. But we're going to talk about that. Right now we need to go to ads. Just to remind you, if you've just joined us, you're on 101.9 Chai FM. This is the Dis-Chem Foundation Show. I'm Kathy Kalin. I'm joined in studio by the team from the Dis-Chem Foundation, the wonderful Dis-Chem Foundation. Jacqueline Kohlberg, say hello.
Hi.
Luvukazi Mponzo, say hello.
Hello.
And Emma van Dongen.
Hello.
And we are talking about the silent hunger, or the invisible, the hidden hunger. If you want to join the conversation, I'd love to hear from you. Send a WhatsApp, 061-895-1019.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
If you've just joined me, my name is Kathy Kayla. This is 101.9 Chai FM. This is the Dis-Chem Foundation Show. And joining me this morning from the wonderful Dis-Chem Foundation is Jacqueline Kohlberg.
Hello.
Luvukazi Mponzo.
Hello.
And Emma van Dongen.
Hello.
We're talking about hidden hunger crisis. Now, I was very interested and quite alarmed, to be honest, to learn about how much food is dumped in South Africa. And it is extraordinary that, you know, that we aren't. So look, how do, if you're a farmer, right, and you're growing, let's go back to the carrot example, right? We've got economies of scale. So the farmer, if he has a very, very good crop, right, economies of scale being the more something is in demand, the more expensive it's going to be. So you want to control the amount of carrots going to market, even if you have a bumper crop, because you want to get your money back. So you're going to dump part of it, right? And there's something so unjust about that, because we're not talking about ugly carrots. We're talking about economy. And I get it. And I know that, you know, farmers need to make a profit, but there has to be something that can be done. Listen, this is not a problem that's going to be solved in, you know, 1 hour on radio with the Dis-Chem Foundation. But what the Dis-Chem Foundation does is that they actually step in to pick up the slack. And that's what we're going to be talking about next. All the different ways that the Dis-Chem Foundation is engaging people who are really, really the most vulnerable when it comes to food insecurity. So firstly, let's define food insecurity. Luva, I'm going to ask you about this one. How would you define food insecurity for us?
It's actually not having enough in terms of what you eat as a person, because we've got those five micronutrients that you need, which is your vitamin A, your zinc, your iron, you need your folate, and so if you don't have that, also.
I didn't hear you say coffee or sugar.
No, it's definitely not.
Those are their own food groups.
So that excess, and also like being able to consume those food insecurity, not you having an access to those,
that you don't know that you're going to have a meal when you're due to have a meal.
Yes, that's food insecurity, because yeah. you need that to, especially to grow as a child, to learn to be able to move and be active. So right. Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about what the Dis-Chem Foundation is doing. Jacqueline, I'm going to start with you, please.
So, and I definitely would like to throw to Luvo and Emma as well. One of our flagship interventions is, it's a beautiful thing. It's we refer to it as JUMP. It's a Joint Unity Meal Partnership, which focuses on providing nutrient-rich meals to young children. So since the program began, millions and millions of meals have been distributed through Hope Worldwide, who's our implementation partner, to vulnerable children in ECDs.
What's ECDs?
Early Childhood Development Centers.
Okay.
And our partners with this are Future Life, who provide the Unity Meal, which is full of every single nutrient that you need for a day.
Those are cereals that we see in Dis-Chem stores.
So what you'll see is you'll see the pouches that have got water in them, and it's a fun thing. You burst the water on the one side and you mix it, and that little pouch is sustainable for a day of energy, nutrients. It's quite amazing. But now we can't put that into the communities, because unfortunately it will get resold, because it's brand. Future Life is a brand. So it's the same thing, but it goes into bulk packaging, and it's called a Unity Meal.
Okay.
And the ECDs, through our contributions, and I'll share who our partners are now, Hope Worldwide distribute this, and you mix it just with room temperature water, literally, and you give it a good mix, and it's delicious. I love it. Porridge type.
It's a cereal. It's like a cereal.
It is. And it's delicious, and the kids love it. And it's giving them what they need to get through their day. So that goes out as a Unity Meal, which is Joint Unity Meal Partnership. And our partners are Octodec and Nivea, which is the Beiersdorf Group, and, of course, the Dis-Chem Foundation. And we're able to support 3.6 million meals annually into the ECDs, which is not as many as we would like it to be. It's a beautiful partnership, and
what is preventing it from being more?
Finance. You know, the Dis-Chem Foundation.
So, in other words, we need to shop more. Is that what you're saying?
No, not shop more.
Talk about benefits.
We're looking to get other partners, other corporates that would be interested in partnering with us, and we'd love to be able to achieve a minimum of 10 million in the near future. Meals.
It's one of those things that you hope that you aren't successful at it. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
You don't want to be successful in feeding starving people. You want people to not be starving.
We want people to not be starving.
What's going to change that, Jacqueline? I mean, where does subsistence farming come into this?
So I'm going to answer that in two parts. In that, first of all, people need to. I'm going to quote Lynette Chow. So while South Africa produces enough food to feed its population... To quote Lynette specifically, the Dis-Chem Foundation believes that addressing hunger is not only about feeding people today, but also creating sustainable solutions that help communities feed themselves tomorrow.
Yes.
On that point, if I may, sorry, I've digressed a little bit. I'm going to let Luvo speak to what we're doing in our hydroponic garden. So Luvo oversees the hydroponic garden. We have two phenomenal women, Elizabeth and Osisi, who are passionate, and our garden is phenomenal, and the systems that they've...
I've seen it. It's very impressive.
Kathy, you need to come and see it again.
All right.
Because it started as a pilot, and we've been looking for affordability, that people in the rural areas that just don't have money can get this going for next to nothing.
Incredible.
I mean, I was blown away.
But it could happen in the cities as well.
Yeah. This is
anywhere. It could happen anywhere. That's the point.
It could happen anywhere. Yeah. I mean, I walked into the garden last week and there was a 5-liter Bene bottle of water that the water had been drunk and it was finished, and they cut the bottle in half and they turned it upside down and they put string on it. And there's beautiful broccoli in winter, which apparently it doesn't grow, sprouting beautifully. And it's just compost. It's a basic medium. It is a hydroponic system. And I think I'm going to hand to Luvo from here because her knowledge of the garden and the nutrients.
Look how her face lit up when you started talking about hydroponics.
No,
this is definitely your thing. Luvo, let's talk about the hydroponics and the gardens.
It goes back to affordability and also in terms of cost-effective ways that we can come up with so that people can be sustainable. Also, the heat and hunger is a problem of affordability. So people are left, or families are left with a choice, whether they buy maize meal and the bread, which is going to make you feel you for the longest time, than you maybe just buying a spinach instead. But when it comes to that, which is why we've got the backyards ideas, the hydroponics, because it gives you that micronutrients that you need. You can grow your spinach, you can grow, going back to carrots, which is, it's giving you that vitamin A, and also the zinc you're getting from the beetroot and the beetroot leaves as well. So we've got different ways. We've got the bucket system that we're using. You just need a bucket and compost and a seed, which is after you can harvest.
Miraculous
for the,
when you think about it, actually, isn't it? You take this little thing and you put it in the ground and you put a little bit of water and a tree grows. It's incredible.
Sometimes you don't even need a ground. You just need a bucket, and then you open holes on the side. You fill it with compost, and then you plant your seeds on the side. And then you get more than 20 crops from there, which is, it's... you can even do it in your balcony, in your stoop, which is, this is also just helping in terms of the crisis we have with the hunger.
Yes.
And also it gives you that diversity in terms of when it comes to your diet, because you're getting this vitamin A, you're getting the zinc that you need. And then you're left with the choice of just going and get the maize, and then you've got the other nutrients at the backyard. So you use the available resources that you have. You don't have to go and buy. You don't have to crack your head in terms of where I'm going to get the next money for the seed, because we're growing up, our grandmothers, we used to go and plant maize, and then you don't consume everything from the field. You need to keep the seed.
Because it's seasonal.
Yes.
You have to eat according to the season. Yes.
So
oranges are for winter.
Yes.
Right.
And
you need extra vitamin C, all of that.
Yeah, and also those oranges, you don't have to eat them all. You need to keep some so that they can give you the seed for the next season.
Yeah.
So that's what we do. And also in terms of the compost, we've got our little own side for the compost, as we've mentioned, in terms of the farmers wasting the carrot that they don't think it's going to sell on the market. That's what we have. We've got the leaves. Also, we've got wastage, because you cannot be guaranteed that you're going to get 100% from your crops.
Right.
But that 1%, you can put it aside and you make your own compost, and which is good for the soil, because you're giving the soil what you need to give you back. And also in the buckets as well, you can use that compost to grow your food. So you really do not need a big farm. You don't need a land. You can grow it everywhere, anywhere with what you have at that point.
Absolutely incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Incredible. Okay, but that's also, you know, there's a lot more that DSGEM is doing. So we've got the DSGEM Foundation. We're talking about providing nutritious meals to vulnerable children. What areas are, you know, I'm talking about the geography now. You know, where are the children most vulnerable? In cities or in rural?
Everywhere. In a city, starving as well. It's not just...
It's probably, in my mind, more likely, but...
Yeah, it's not just rural at all. I mean, it's everywhere. People are hungry, and in communities that you wouldn't imagine. And I don't want to use the word expect, because you should have no expectations. Mm. Nobody knows
when
what goes
hungry,
on
yes.
in anybody else's environment or home.
You're so right.
And sometimes, it's well hidden, but there is very... and to, it's a well hidden hunger, if you will. People don't want others to know, so you don't find out until you do, and then it's devastating. And that goes across the country, across communities, across LSMs. We just don't know where people are hungry and what they're doing. I last week went to the opening of the Yad Ha'aron soup kitchen. I'm going to call it a dignity kitchen, which Ladles of Love call their dignity kitchen in Cape Town. And I love that term as opposed to soup kitchen, because it is giving dignity. And particularly this kitchen, it's so dignified. It's been set up so well and so efficiently. People are hungry and they don't want others to know, especially in tight-knit communities, you know, where people may know each other, but they don't know what's going on behind closed doors. So it's
very tricky.
What makes
a dignity kitchen a dignity kitchen as opposed to a soup kitchen, other than a name change?
Nothing. It's all in the name. It's how you want, you know, a rose is a rose by any other name. It's just, it's dignified.
Roses today don't smell.
Yeah.
It's a problem.
they don't anyway. It's dignified that people are able to access a meal without having to beg or scrounge for it. That is undignified.
With no judgment.
Yes. With no judgment, good point. When I see people digging in dustbins and looking for food, it just always makes my hair stand on end. It's something I'm very adverse to. And by people being able to access, and we support dignity and soup kitchens nationally that serves hundreds and thousands of people monthly. We have in Paarl Magda Sopkombe, she's the cutest little lady, and she's serves between 700 and 1,000 meals on a daily basis. And again, we're on the ground. We've been there. We go. We see the people waiting in line. She doesn't like anybody to have their meal. And they come in waves because there's so many of them. So they come in, they sit down, they have got to pray. And once they've prayed, they can get their hot meal. And she always makes sure she's got something extra from wherever she can get it and however she can get it. So they've got something to take home.
Jesus, people are angels, hey?
There really are angels that do walk amongst us.
You're there to support the angels.
Sorry?
You're there to support the angels. Well, I mean, you're angels in your own right. But
thank God for them. They're out there doing it. And thank God we're able to support it. Then we have on our doorstep in Claremont and the Sophia Town, which all falls under Randburg. Yes, it's your doorstep. You know, Randburg's massive. Fred and Marty's, they support the poorest community in Johannesburg, from brand new babies to the elderly. These are the only meals that children will have, or people will have in a day. That's it. And they open between 12 and they wait till about 3:30 so that the kids get their meal for the day after school. They also do sandwiches in the morning for some of the kids. And what we do, something else that I'll tell you. Yeah. I believe there's an ad break coming up.
You know, you are so intuitive.
I read well.
Really, it's amazing. Don't give our secrets away. You're on 101.9 Chai FM. I'm Kathy Kaler. This is the Dis-Chem Foundation show. And that was Jacqueline Kohlberg. She's the head of the Dis-Chem Foundation. Also joined by Luvakazi Mponzo and Emma van Dongen. And we're talking about hidden hunger crisis in South Africa and what the Dis-Chem Foundation is doing. All you have to do, if you want to get all the facts, the figures, the CSIR has done a whole lot. There's a lot of organizations, global and South African, that are looking, and they just look at the data. Go and check the data. You can fact check everything that I have told you today. And it's very important that we talk about what Dis-Chem is doing. So just to sum up, you know what, I'm going to do a summation right after the ad break. If you want to get in touch, do so. Send a WhatsApp, 061-895-1019.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
If you've just joined us, welcome. Where have you been? Okay, but let me just get you up to speed. I'm Kathy Kaler, and joining me in studio this morning on this beautiful, beautiful, it's cleared up, thank goodness, Thursday morning is from the Dis-Chem Foundation. We've under Lynette Saltzman, we have Jacqueline Kohlberg. We also have Luvakazi Mponzo and Emma van Dongen. Today we're talking about the hidden hunger crisis in South Africa. And it is a hidden crisis. It is something that we don't always know. The government doesn't really talk about. When you're talking about in South Africa on a daily basis, 27,400 tons of food is dumped. Isn't that just wild? That is just crazy. But that is on a daily basis. And that is from, you know, it comes from many different sources, the information. Okay. So why don't they have access? Why don't people have access? So one is economics. Economics because they cannot afford food, and economics because the farmers want to keep their produce at a higher rate, so they dump a whole lot, which makes less produce available. Okay, that produce that they, instead of dumping, you know, might say, well, an ugly carrot can be used to make a carrot cake or carrot juice, but when you are industrializing, when you are manufacturing, there has to be a uniformity. So carrots all need to be more or less the same size. You can't have big carrots, round carrots, square carrots. They all have to be uniform in order to do that. So not all ugly carrots can be utilized. There's lots of different reasons to this. There's also the geography. Sometimes it costs a lot of money for the farmer to get the, I'm just using carrots as an example, the carrots from the ground. He's got to pay for the labor, and he's got to get it on the trucks, and he's got to get it from the trucks to the harbor, and from the harbor he has to get it to, you know, wherever the trucking are, the trucks are, and the trucks are going to bring it to the supermarkets. Sometimes they're going to keep them in cold storage. I know that there's a very well-known upmarket chain. I was speaking to a chef about this. When you think that your lettuce is 3 days old, it's actually 6 months old. It has been irradiated, and it is very, very, very unhealthy. So I would really consider where you're getting your fruit and vegetables, just putting that out there. That's the first thing. Then, so that's why there isn't a lot of access. So what is the Dis-Chem Foundation doing? The Dis-Chem Foundation, and I want to talk to these points as well, is one, they provide nutritious meals to vulnerable children. They do it with partnerships. They do the distribution through Hope Worldwide to vulnerable children, and the partners are Future Life, Octodec, Nivea, and of course the Dis-Chem Foundation. Those are the four partners, and they feed, what is the figure, Jacqueline?
3.6 million children per annum.
Per annum. That's incredible. That's absolutely incredible. And what enables this, promoting nutrition rather than just food relief. So you're actually educating people. How do you do that? Emma?
So I think actually the correct person to answer this would be Livo, because she manages the garden and she can go really into detail on how we go about the education process about the nutrition.
Let's do that.
And about the nutrients.
It's all about sustainability. So when we go out and we put up a garden in communities, we want to leave them sustainable. So how we do with our hydroponics in terms of the systems we have, bucket system, pallet system, the vertical system, the your towers, the empty water bottles, everything that we have, we go there, assess the area, and check what is going to be suitable. And while we're doing that, we given maybe one person from that organization to be with us the whole time, and we show them
you
this
train
is
them.
Yes, train them in terms of you've got a rotten or a spinach with maybe pests. You don't have to put it away or put it in a dustbin. You put it in this place. You do the compost. This is how you mulch so that your soil stays moist. You've got the microorganisms. So we transfer that information to them so that we leave them being able to do it themselves. And then if there's any problem, we're always available to them. So we make sure that we go out there and we give them that knowledge. And we're also available to them in terms of if there's any problem, we're always there with them. And the aim is just to leave them sustainable without us.
So I also have a question about, you mentioned a word there, hydro, meaning water.
Yes.
A lot of these communities probably don't have water.
Yes.
So how does Dis-Chem Foundation manage that?
Which is why we call it our lab, the hydroponics garden in the office. It's our lab. That's where we try things, and then we see what's going to work. If that environment has an access to water, then we go with a system that is going to be suitable for that environment. If they don't have access to water, then the buckets are coming in. The pallet system is coming in. Also, with our hydroponics as well, we've got medium. So we're using medium instead of just letting the water run because we've got water crisis in South Africa.
Yes.
What's going to happen if we don't get water back in a week? Then we know that we've got a medium that is able to hold the water for us. Even if we cannot have water in a week or something, we're not going to have a damage and not be able to feed people.
Incredible. Jacqueline, you had something to say. I feel so proud of you. I can't even tell you. I feel so proud of all of you for what you're doing, and you're just working so meaningfully. Look at this woman's face. Look at she can't smile any broader. Jacqueline.
Oh, they're wonderful. So to Luvo's point, we were asked a question the other day, the Dyskin Foundation, and, you know, it's fantastic.
Who talks about the Dyskin Foundation like that?
No,
send them
my way. Doing such great work. Thank you, Kathy. Oh, no, so you're doing such great work in that, and that so many companies and so many organizations like to go in and plant a garden and make a whole big story about it, and then they walk away.
Yeah.
We don't do that.
Yeah. You're in for the long
term. We're in for the long term. And to Luvo's point, and also with the Humanitarian Empowerment Fund, where, as you know, we plant a garden a month and put water in where we have to, we upskill that person in the community so that they are able to manage those gardens and there is somebody overseeing it. We also give them a stipend so that there's more investment into it, aside from just having a meal for themselves, their families, and their communities. We don't walk away. No. So while we'll go in and assess what needs to be done, and Lovo's very thorough, she's pedantic, it's important to know that we do not walk away. We upskill somebody that can look after those gardens, and if they are, once they do become sustainable, if they need assistance, extra assistance, we do go in and assist to ensure sustainability.
Right.
And also, just to add on to that, which we haven't mentioned yet, is we, as the garden and as the Dyskin Foundation and the gardens we're putting in, we don't like to use pesticides.
Yes.
So everything is grown without pesticides and those harmful chemicals that do cause later reactions on, especially in children, such as eczema and all of that. So everything is no pesticides.
Yeah, yeah.
Chemical-free. If I wasn't in love with you before, I certainly am now. I just have to tell you. All right. So just in summation, South Africa produces enough food to feed its population. 8 million still go hungry. And the challenge is not food production, but access to affordable, nutritious food. Hidden hunger is often invisible. Many people have enough food to fill their stomachs, but lack of essential nutrients needed for healthy growth and development. While many families struggle to put food on the table, millions of tons of food are wasted every year. This highlights the need for better food redistribution systems. And remember that hunger affects more than physical health. It impacts children's ability to learn, to concentrate, and reach their full potential. And finally, ending hunger requires more than food relief. You have to employ sustainable solutions such as job creation, community projects, food redistribution, and nutritional education. You have to rework the whole system, right? You have to talk about transformation, and it is absolutely critical to long-term food security. So now that we've spoken about that, Jacqueline, how does all of this get funded? Let's talk about the Dyskin Benefits card.
We thank all of our loyal customers for shopping at Dyskin. And every swipe counts. I hope you all have your better rewards card. And the rewards are better. It's unbelievable just how much you can get. So you're not only rewarding your communities and your societies, but you're rewarding yourself as well.